In conclusion, y'all missed it. Sorry. I have a hunch that if you could be completely honest, if you didn't feel like somebody would look down on you at the moment, if I could sit down with you and just have a conversation, that there is something that you question, that there is something that you're not sure about, that you would like to have an answer to. The unfortunate problem is many of you sitting here looking at you, many of you have grown up in the church, many of you probably were in the church from a young age. You've been in the church most of your life. And one of the problems with the church is we've gotten to the point where we make questions seem out of place. This should be one of the places where it's safe to ask a question and try to find an answer about what it really means to follow Jesus Christ, what it really means when the Bible tells us something. But unfortunately, we have brought it to the point where all too often we give an answer and that's enough. We teach you an answer, but we don't teach you why. And so I would think that it's probably safe to assume that if you could be honest this morning, you would say that there is something that you doubt. That you have a doubt of some sort, that you have a question that you would like answered. That's the purpose of what we're doing for the next 6 weeks, is not necessarily to answer all the questions. I don't want you to come the next 6 weeks and think, oh, he's going to give me all the answers, and when we're done, I'll know it all. If you know it all when you're done, I want to learn from you, because I don't have all the answers. I've got questions. That there are things that lead me to question, but what I've learned is that when I ask questions, I get answers. And when I get answers, I get the chance to grow. And so what we're doing is we're going to ask some questions. We're going to examine some of those and bring answers. But in the process, I want you to understand that there is reason, there is a good place. In fact, if you've looked at the bulletin, you can see that I would even say that there is an upside to doubt. When I was growing up, I grew up in western Nebraska. And if you've been through western Nebraska, you understand that if you see a row of trees, if you see a group of trees, they did not grow there on their own. Oh, there are a few little places along some of the rivers where you might find some natural stands of trees. But in western Nebraska, pretty much, if you see trees, you understand that somebody planted them there. And somebody took care to grow them. And so one of the things that I learned is about some things about trees. What I learned is if you take a little tree and you plant it, not a big tree, but a little tree, it's going to get buffeted by the wind. Week after week, year after year, the wind is going to blow that little tree. And if it's small enough when you plant it, you'll notice that that tree will almost touch the ground when the wind blows. Now, you might think that that's a bad thing when a tree touches the ground, but when it's little, it's a good thing. And as that tree grows, you'll notice that it continues to bend, but over time it bends a little less and a little less. And the thing is it looks like a bad thing, but in actuality that bending of that tree is something beneficial. Because as the tree bends in the wind, it breaks the fibers of the tree. And as those fibers break, they then heal. And when they heal, they bond together and they bond in a different way. And sometimes the wind causes the tree to twist and it breaks the bonds a little differently. And when they heal differently. But what happens is that little tree, when you plant it at that size, that can reach over and touch the ground, can grow into a massive tree, 40, 50, 60 feet tall, that can withstand the winds that come howling across the plains. Now, there's nothing to stop the winds in western Nebraska. except for that tree that you planted, that you want to stop the wind. And so it's good that when it's little, it bends a little bit and it breaks a little bit, but it grows back stronger. Because then when it's a 40 or a 50 foot tree, it has the strength. It has the ability to stand tall in the midst of the wind. And our doubts are very much like that. Our doubts give us the opportunity to grow. Our doubts give us the opportunity to challenge some of the things that we're not sure of, if we deal with them correctly. And so over the next few weeks, we're going to deal with doubt. We're going to ask some questions. We're going to look for some answers. And things may feel a little different. We're going to begin with a question that apologist and author Philip Yancey stated in an interview he did several years ago. And in the interview, Yancey ponders, does religious faith make sense in a world of the Hubble telescope and the internet? Have we figured out the basics of life, or is something important, or is some important ingredient missing? Is our faith relevant today? We're not the first people with doubts. You're not the first one who questions things that you believe. And to see this, I want us to turn this morning to Luke chapter 7. Beginning with the 18th verse, you'll understand John the Baptist came before Jesus, and John the Baptist got some special information. He had a special place in preparing the way for Jesus. And John himself, when he sees Jesus earlier in the book, or in the beginning of the book of John, he says, "Behold, the Lamb of God that takes away the sins of the world." John had this great faith of who Jesus was, but yet John is then thrown in prison, and we come to this. It says, "And the disciples of John reported all these things to him, and John, calling two of his disciples, sent them to the Lord, saying, 'Are you the one who is to come, or shall we look for another?' And when the man had come to him, they said, 'John the Baptist has sent us to you, saying, Are you the one who is to come, or shall we look for another?' In that hour he healed many people of diseases and plagues and evil spirits, and many who were blind he bestowed sight. And he said to them, 'Go, tell John what you have seen and heard. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the poor have good news preached to them. And blessed is the one who has not offended by me.' When John's messengers had gone, Jesus began to speak to the crowds concerning John. 'What did you go into the wilderness to see? A reed shaken by the wind? What then did you go out to see? A man dressed in soft clothing? Behold, those who are dressed in splendid clothing and live in luxury are in the king's courts. What then did you go out to see? A prophet? Yes, and I tell you, more than a prophet. This is he of whom it is written, 'Behold, I send my messenger before your face, who will prepare your way before you. I tell you, among those born of a woman, none is greater than John, yet the one who is the least in the kingdom of God is greater than he.'" You have to understand that John had some doubts. John wasn't 100% sure in what he thought he knew. And so it leads me to a question. It leads me to the question that we need to begin with. If we're going to look at this and we're going to say we have to have room for some doubt, we have to begin with the foundation. We have to ask the question, what is doubt? How is it that we can look at the life of John and see that John has some doubts? And it begins with a good definition of what doubt is and what doubt is not. You see, often, often we look at doubt as the opposite of faith. You would say that I have faith in something, and then you would say the opposite of that is to doubt it. Well, doubt, here is doubt. According to the dictionary, doubt is a state of mind in suspension between faith and unbelief. It's like this. If you had a fence, and on this side of the fence was faith or belief that you held something to be true, and on this side of the fence, you said, I don't believe that. I believe that that is not true. Faith and belief. Doubt is the fence. Doubt is that space between belief and unbelief. That's why a man was able to come to Jesus and ask a question, and then he looks at Jesus and he says, I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief. It's not that he doubted, it's that there were parts of him that had doubt. Help me overcome what I doubt. I believe you can do what I've asked you to do, Jesus, but help me to overcome. Doubt is not the opposite of faith. Disbelief is what is the opposite of faith. And so I'm not telling you that it's okay to have disbelief. But what I'm saying is it's okay to have some doubts. It's okay to have these things that we're not sure what we believe. Because here's another thing that I see. As I was reading through this passage in John, as I was thinking about these sermons, you realize that doubt is simply a normal state in life. Doubt is a normal thing in everybody's life. There are things that we aren't sure about. But it's what we do with the uncertainties that makes a difference. Philip Yancey says this. He says, inquisitiveness and questioning are inevitable parts of the life of faith. Where there is certainty, there is no room for faith. Where there is certainty, there is no room for faith. If you know something for certain, you don't have to have faith. If you know for certain that you have 4 sticks of butter in your refrigerator, you don't have to believe that you'll have enough butter to make a cookie recipe that calls for 4 sticks of butter. If you know something for certain, you remove faith from the equation. And therefore, faith and doubt are necessary. We have to have faith, and so we have to have room for some questions. John had questions. Are you the one? Are you the one? Or should we expect somebody else? What causes doubt? If doubt is natural, what are some of the causes? What are some things in your life? What are some things in the world that can cause doubt? Well, you look at John. Here we are. John has already stated that Jesus is the Lamb that takes away the sin of the world. John has said that he was not the Messiah, but the Messiah was still to come. And John said that he had to decrease so that Jesus could increase. John has given this great witness to Jesus being the promised one of God. But John the Baptist is now in prison. And sitting in a prison cell, John is beginning to question some of the things that he believed to be true. Sitting in a prison cell, John is beginning to question some of the things that he thought he had seen. Because here's the thing, if Jesus was the Messiah, which is the question that John has, Messiah, Christ, the anointed one of God, the promised the promised king who was to sit on David's throne. These are things that John believed that are now in question. Because here he is, he's sitting in prison, and John is saying, I'm sitting in prison, and I don't think I should be. I don't think this is how the script is supposed to play out. In part because John believed, John, like most of the Jews in his day, probably believed that the Messiah was supposed to come in and overthrow the Roman government. And here is John sitting in prison. And instead of seeing Jesus overthrow the government, he sees Jesus going from town to town preaching. And so he's left the question. He's left to ask, are you the one, or should I expect someone else? And as I was thinking about this, I began to say, you know, today, if I were to ask you, what are some of the reasons that people have doubts? There are a lot of reasons. One of those is unanswered prayer. Or, more realistically, that God won't be treated like a gumball machine and give you whatever you want. But here's the thing. Sometimes people go to God in prayer and they say, well, I prayed, and God didn't answer my prayer. I prayed that the cancer would go away. But they died from cancer. I prayed for safety, and they were in an accident. I prayed for, and you can insert the object of the prayer, and God didn't come through. And many times, people will have doubts in the validity of faith in God because of unanswered prayer. Another one is because of unresolved spiritual conflict. People have something going on in their life and they don't see an answer and they don't see a way out. And they believe that God should be answering and God should be just showing me this great way through. And they don't see the answer. And so they start to question and they start to doubt the things that God says. Sometimes people doubt because of misuse of the scriptures. Because people claim that God says something that God doesn't claim. Or people do things in the name of God that God doesn't call for. You know, it's really hard to believe in God if you're told over and over and over that God is going to do something for you, and you never see it happen. If I told all of you today that God wanted you to be millionaires, and I told you that for the next 2 years, and none of you ever became a millionaire, but I kept saying that God says it, and I kept trying to show you where God says you will be a millionaire, but you never become a millionaire. You're either going to start to question whether I know what I'm talking about, or you're going to start to question what I'm saying that the Bible says. And unfortunately, too many people have heard that God says things that God doesn't say. And it leaves people to question. Sometimes it's unexplainable circumstances. Sometimes things arise and things happen that we don't have an explanation for. And since we don't have a good explanation for them, people question the reality of God. And they'll throw faith out because they don't have a good answer. And sometimes it's just simply sin. Sometimes the doubt that we have in our life is simply because we refuse to do or refuse to accept what God says. We know, we've heard, and there is there is some belief within us, but we just simply refuse to accept it. Sometimes it's what Paul says, even though there's abundance evidence in creation, people still choose to ignore it. It's called sin. And so we could sit here and I could ask you, and I'm sure that if I ask you, what are some reasons for doubt, you could begin to give me some reasons that I haven't covered. But in reality, there's a lot of reasons to doubt, and if we're honest, we all have some of those doubts. And the thing is we need to then begin to ask ourselves, why? Why do I doubt? Why do I have this question? Because when we begin to ask, why do I have the question? What does the doubt stem from? Then we can begin to answer the question, how do I deal with doubt? How do I deal with my doubt? And that's what we see from John. It's how to deal with doubt. John's answer to how to deal with doubt is you go to the source. John, he couldn't do it himself, so he sent his disciples, and he sent them to Jesus, and he said, are you the one? Or should we expect somebody else? John simply went to the source, and he says, I need to know. I can't just let this doubt hang here. I have to have an answer. And we can't hide from our doubts either. You know, sometimes we want to hide from our doubts. Church has for too long been a safe place to hide from your doubts. I'll just go to church and then I don't have to deal with the questions. Because nobody expects me to have any questions. I'll just go and I'll sit and I'll listen to the preacher and he'll talk to me. And then if I'm really feeling good, I'll stay for Sunday school and they'll give me some answers. And nobody will ever know that I have these questions, and I'll just keep pretending and I'll put on this mask that says I have all of the answers. And I'll show up week after week after week and pretend I know everything. And nobody will know that I have doubts. But here's the thing. If you want to begin to deal with your doubts, if you really want to do what you need to do with doubts, you need to be honest and to put down the mask. Because here's the thing. I've already told you this morning, we all have doubts. So you can look at the person next to you and say, they don't have it all together. Don't look at your spouse and say that. That might get you in trouble. I don't want to have any marriage problems. Don't say it out loud. Just, you know, if you look around, nobody has it all together. Nobody has all of the answers. I'm saying, you're all looking at me. I don't have all the answers. So don't expect me to have all of the answers. I have to study. I have to look for the answers sometimes. But you can't hide behind your doubts. You have to be willing. You have to be able to admit that you have some questions. So don't hide behind them. Don't hide them. Don't hide behind them. I like what Hebrews chapter 10 says. Hebrews chapter 10 and the 23rd verse, the writer says, let us hold fast to the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how to stir one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another all the more as you see the day drawing near. You see, we can't hide behind them. If we continue to hide behind our doubts, we can't encourage one another. If we pretend that we have all of the answers, if we pretend that we have everything together, when we come in here, we can't encourage each other. Yet the writer of Hebrews says we're to do that all the more as we see the day of Christ approaching. Or Paul in Ephesians chapter 4 says this, beginning in the 14th verse. He says, so that we may no longer be children tossed to and fro by the waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by human cunning, by craftiness in deceitful schemes. Rather, speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into Him who is the head, into Christ, from whom the whole body joined together and held together by every joint with which it is equipped, when each part is working properly, makes the body grow so that it builds itself up in love. You can't teach and you can't encourage each other if you don't know where the doubts are. It's okay to have doubts. It's okay to have questions. We have to deal with them. I like a quote. Rick Glover, who is a preacher at East 91st Street in Indianapolis, they did this material. You have to understand, I should have explained this a couple before I started. This is a program that's been put together. Lincoln Christian University was asked to put this together, and it's been put together. They've worked on it. They've had some other people work on it. East 91st did it as a trial. They started right after Easter, and so they went through it. The churches here in Decatur were asked if we would do it the same way, if we would kind of go through, test the material, and give some feedback to help them make it better. And so you guys are guinea pigs. I'll put the wheel up next week. But Rick Glover, in his sermon, he had a quote from somebody in his church who had it from somebody else, and I can't give you all of the... But no, this is where I got it, was from Rick Glover. He says, doubt is good if it remains a question. It only becomes a vice if it is the final answer. Doubt is good if you continue to ask questions. If you look at faith and you continue to have questions and you continue to ask the questions, the problem is in the church, we've made it too much of a vice where it's, I've got a question, but I can't ask it, so I'm just going to, I'll never have an answer. And so we quit asking the question. We have to ask the questions. Philip Yancey said, I encourage people to doubt their doubts as much as their faith. You see, here's John. John's in prison, and John could have simply said, you know what? Jesus must not be the Messiah because he hasn't fulfilled what I believe the Messiah should do. But Jesus knew what John's question was. John just said, are you the one? But Jesus knew that John was asking the question, are you going to free us from captivity? And Jesus said, John, you're asking the right question, but you've got the wrong frame that you're looking at it through. And so Jesus said, here's the answer, John. The blind are given sight. The lame are made to walk. The deaf are made to hear. The mute are made to speak. He says, people are being restored to health. The captives are being freed. And Jesus answered the question. Jesus didn't condemn John's doubt. Jesus didn't say, John, why are you asking this question? You already know the answer. Here's what I want you to understand. Look at most of you this morning and realize you've been in the church for a long time. It's okay to have doubt. But we have to ask the questions to find the answers. But if you have doubt, if you have questions, if you've been in the church for 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, anybody been in the church 90 years? Somebody help Tracy with his math. I don't care how long you've been in the church. If I can look at you and say that I am pretty sure that you still have some questions, it's okay if those people who aren't part of the church have some questions. In fact, we should understand that they will have some questions. And we have to be willing to ask them with them and help them to understand and find the answers. The church should be the safest place to ask the questions. This should be a place where there is room for some doubt. Not a place where doubt is stigmatized. Not a place where we make somebody feel that if they have some doubts, they're not good enough. Not spiritual enough. That they don't have it all together and they need to get that way. Unfortunately, the fact that we've done that for too long has led to many people walking away from the church. Because they say, if I've got to have it all together and I don't, something must be wrong with me. John was able to ask Jesus a question, and Jesus answered honestly. And we must too. This morning we're going to sing a hymn of invitation. And if you need to understand what it means to come and to know Jesus as Lord and Savior, I'd love to visit with you about that. You can come up this morning and we can start that conversation. You can catch me afterwards and we'll begin that conversation. If you're at a place in your life where you're ready to make a decision for Jesus, I'd love to visit with you. You can come forward. We do that as well. If you just want to say that I want to be a part of this church, because here's the thing, I want this to be a place where it's safe to ask questions and you don't have to have it all together. If you're at a place where you're ready to say, I want to be a part and to identify with this body of believers, won't you come this morning as we stand together as well? Let's stand together and sing.